listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media that's dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your creator and host, and we invite you to interact with us here on our chat on the EmotionalPro.com radio page. When's the last time you were frustrated because no matter how hard you tried, someone with whom you were trying to communicate, work with, or live with proved nearly impossible to get through to? Perhaps they nodded and said okay to your request and then did nothing, or they crossed their arms over their chest and seemed to be listening, but deep inside you knew they were blocking you. Perhaps the person merely whined and blamed others for all that has been going on to the point that you wanted to throw up your hands and run away screaming. But what did you do? Did you attempt to show that person the logic of your ideas? Did you raise your voice or lose it? Perhaps you went off and complained to other people about what a difficult person you have at work or at home. Our guest today on Full Power Living has simple, common sense information for you about how to get through to absolutely anyone. Imagine knowing just what to do and say to face down the bully at work, to stop whiners from gaining access to you, and to help people you love when they're in crisis, as well as keeping yourself from going over the top in frustration whenever you have communication problems. Mark Goulston is with us today with field-tested, powerful techniques for getting people to do just what you want them to do, whether it's your boss, your partner, a relative visiting your home, or a client or team member. Mark Goulston, who can be found at markgoulston.com, that's markgoulston.com. He's a psychiatrist, a business consultant, executive coach, and former FBI and police hostage negotiation trainer. He was trained as a psychiatrist, and he helps people increase their ability to get through to anyone. And he's presenting his ideas on this topic in Just Listen, his new book, Discover the Secret to Getting Through to Absolutely Anyone. That's Just Listen. He's a member of the International Leadership Association. For 20 years, he was a professor at UCLA's internationally renowned Neuropsychiatric Institute. And he has been elected as a fellow of the American Psychiatric Association. The Consumers Research Council of America in Washington, D.C., named Dr. Goulston one of America's top psychiatrists for 3 different years, 2004, 5, and 9. He's also a best-selling author of 4 books you may have heard of, Get Out of Your Own Way and Get Out of Your Own Way at Work. He's a regular contributor to a variety of publications, and he has a syndicated column, Solve Anything with Dr. Mark, which is an internet column. And he blogs for the Huffington Post, and he's also frequently called upon to share his expertise on such shows as Oprah, The Today Show, on ABC, NBC, in The Wall Street Journal, The Harvard Business Review, you name it. Mark, you have done the circuit here, and we are so delighted and honored to have you on Full Power Living today.
I could just go on listening to you talk about me all day.
That's one of the secrets. I heard that, read that in your book. Well, you tell us that a major secret is to really listen, not just to what the person is saying, but to what they're thinking, or what you think they may be thinking. Is that correct?
Well, I think there's a continuum in human relatedness from at the worst end is presuming and jumping to conclusions, and then after that, I think it's figuring people out, and then after that is understanding people, and then at the other end is helping people to feel felt. And what happens is when people feel felt by you, they feel less alone. And when they feel less alone, there's such a hunger in people to feel less alone, they lean into that. So part of the reason that I wrote Just Listen is I often focus on the elephant in the room and then take it on. And what I notice is that there's a lot more people talking than there are people listening. And what I noticed is that if you can listen deeply, and I wanted to call the book Just Care, because I think it teaches you not just how to listen, but to listen in a way in which the people you're listening to feel cared about. But my editor said, you know, Mark, if you write Just Care, fewer people will read it, whereas if you write Just Listen, people will read it and discover how to care, and also discover that not just listening, but caring can make their lives certainly happier and more successful in a business context. A big part of listening is when people are venting at you or complaining or whining, try not to engage with them, because what's really happening is that they're overwhelmed and overloaded, and they're overflowing into you, because they just, as the person, as Peter Finch said in the movie Network, they're mad as hell and they can't take it anymore.
Right.
And if you can just let them go through that and know that there's usually something underneath it, as one of my mentors who passed away that the book is dedicated to, he was the father of the study of suicide and intervention. He said, Mark, if you listen for people's hopes and fears and their pain, it's always there. And when they feel you listening for it, they will open up everything to you. And so I think if you could listen from that, and after people vent, they actually exhale with relief. And the way you can do that is, first of all, have a mindset where you know that if you get into a debate, it's only going to go downhill, and so you don't engage in that. And what you might say to the person is, yeah, no, I know you're angry about work, or I know you're upset with your boss, or I know you're upset with your customers, but what's really going on? And I can tell you, if you say it in just the right tone, it's like cutting diamonds. You say, yeah, no, I understand that, but what's really going on? And you keep pushing, but not in a bad way. They'll reach a point in which they'll let you know, and they'll say, I'm afraid I'm going to get fired. I'm afraid the company's going to close. Or if it's in their personal life, I'm afraid I'm going to get divorced. And then at that point, when they open up to you, it's kind of like you've gotten to the pus of their wound underneath the scab. Resist the temptation to reassure them, give them a solution. Use one of my, what I call, communication deepeners or relationship deepeners. And at that point, say, tell me about that. Or lean in and say, really? Or just do what psychotherapists do. Go, And what that is that's a signal to them to go deeper. And you can actually, and as they go deeper, what's happening is they are exhaling, and why this gets through to people is the gratitude that they feel is so much that often people want to reciprocate. One of the favorite anecdotes in the book for a lot of people was a meeting I had with this CEO who was very busy. It was tough to get an appointment with him, and he was a big footballer, or former football player. And there I am with him, and it's clear the last thing he wants to do is be in a meeting with me. And I can be rather direct. And so I said to him, he wasn't looking at me, and I said, how much time you got for me? And I said it stronger than that. And he looked at me with a look that said, I think it's just about over. And he said, what? And I said, yeah, look at your schedule. How much time do you got for this? And he's fumbling, and I can see he's going to throw me out, and he has 20 minutes. So can you picture this scenario? He's about to throw me out.
Yeah.
And so I looked at him and I said, I think what we're about to talk about is worth your undivided attention, which you can't give me because there's something on your mind that's much more important. And so here's the deal. Let's stop now. We're in minute four. And we'll reschedule this, or you can tell your assistant never let this guy in again. Sorry about that. And never let this person in again. And so you never have to see me again. But take the remaining 15 minutes and take care of whatever's on your mind, because it's not fair to me or other people you meet. It's probably not fair to you to be this preoccupied. And this big guy looks at me and he starts to tear up. And so I say to myself, Mark, you know, you promised yourself when you went into the business world you wouldn't make all these grown men cry. And he looks at me and he says, you know, I'm rather private. And you've known me for 4 minutes. And you know something that people 25 yards from where we're seated don't know, because I'm private. My wife's having a biopsy, and it looks awful. And she's stronger than me, and she said, you go to work. And so I came to work, but I'm not entirely here. And so I said to him, you know, I'm sorry to hear that, and maybe you should be with your wife, because you're not here. And then he was like a big St. Bernard coming in from the rain and shaking me, and went, and then he took a deep breath, he got centered, and he looked at me. And he said, no, I'm not as strong as my wife, but I am strong. I served 2 tours in Vietnam. And you've got my undivided attention. And you've got your full 20 minutes. but do you see the power of that?
Mm-hmm. Well, now, buddy, let me play devil's advocate for a minute. You
I'm a psychotherapist, so who can do that? Who else can do that?
See, I am also. So I understand how to do that, but what about the ordinary person? Are they going to have the strength and the ability to hang in there for these things?
Well, they didn't. What you're saying is, look, they don't have the courage of my convictions, which comes from 30 years of experience, because I wasn't always this courageous. So you're absolutely right.
Yes, I relate to that.
But I think if your focus is totally to be of service to the other person, even though I'm forceful, Eileen, I'm an opener. I mean, I have relationships with some of the top CEOs in this country, but I'm not a closer. I'm not a salesperson. But what happens is when I meet with someone, my total focus is helping them articulate what's most critical, important, and urgent to them to accomplish. And often they don't even know that, because no one has provided them that space. And then when I clarify that with them, I do everything I can to help them accomplish that, including something that I call the Miracle on 34th Street sales pitch, in which I say, oh, no, don't hire me. You need these 3 other things before you hire me. So either get them internally, or I know people who are excellent at what they do and can do those things for you. But, you know, I can help you with people issues and leadership and team building and yada, yada, yada. But from what you've told me, I think the first 3 things you need to do are these other things. And I'm doing it very sincerely. I am there to be of service to them in accomplishing what's important, critical, and urgent. And it's a win-win-win, because I don't have to sell them on anything. They realize that I am there to be of service. They're appreciative of that. And plus, I am collecting a group of people that are incredibly excellent at what they do, meaning that they will consistently exceed the highest expectations of the people they do it for. And so if I bring those people in, those people are grateful to me for the opportunity. And so it has just worked marvelously. So what I would say to people, now it's difficult. You see, I don't work for a company, so it's difficult to go on a sales pitch and come back and say, well, the good news is I got business for 7 other people, but not us. But I think if you have sort of an enlightened sales manager who realizes that the way of the future is networking, the way of the future is creating opportunities for other people and triggering reciprocal generosity, you know, I think they would get that. And I'll tell you, I love it because it takes all the pressure off me to sell people on anything.
That's really great. I certainly appreciate that. Well, in Just Listen, you're saying that us ordinary folks do have the job of persuading other people. In almost every day, almost every person that we meet. And so you offer this thing that you identify as the persuasion cycle. When you're opening people up, there's a certain progression that they go through as you're opening. Would you share that with us?
Yeah, a couple lessons, because I love to teach. Also, to anyone who wants to write a book, there's only one graph in the book, because the editors wisely said people can't stand graphs. You know, they get flashbacks from high school, and so the only graphic is this thing called the persuasion cycle. And the persuasion cycle is basically about what kind of conversation, including asking and listening, do you need to have with someone to take them from, shall we say, resistant to doing, to listening to what you have to say, to considering what you have to say, to being willing to do something along the lines of what you're talking to them about, to actually doing it, to being glad they did it, and then after they're glad they did it, continuing to do. Now, the second lesson that I talk to people about is, and this comes back from my hostage negotiation and suicide intervention days, I think if you can cultivate using what I call experience near language as opposed to experience distant language, it works better. So experience near language is something that people immediately get without having to think about it. When you start using some intellectual language, that's experience distant, and because people's minds are so overloaded, often you don't get a mind share from them. So the persuasion cycle are all experience near things. I mean, it's not highfalutin language, listening, considering, willing to do, doing. So that's sort of the second lesson. And here's the key. To get buy-in, meaning the beginning of people being persuaded, probably what's more accurate would be, you know, sort of the agreement cycle, because it teaches you how to gain agreement. But because it's a management book and because people want to persuade, we called it the persuasion cycle. But I think really what it's about is gaining agreement. And so here's the key that people seem to love. Is in your mind's eye, someone who's resistant to doing, in your mind's eye, what's the body posture that goes along? Now, they may not do it in front of you because it would be rude, but what's the body posture of someone who's resistant to doing and resistant to listening?
Well, they'd certainly be withdrawing themselves from you in some way. They could be looking at the ceiling. They could be holding their upper body back. They could have their arms folded.
Jeez, you got 100%, yeah. They're leaning back, their arms are crossed, and they're looking up at the ceiling skeptical. You know, score 3-3 for Eileen. So here's the interesting thing that we know from neuroscience, is if you can get that people's body language and posture is connected to what's going on in their mind. So if you can get people to uncross their arms in front of you, they will uncross their arms in their mind. And the way to do that is you ask questions that have such an where the answers have such an emotional charge that in order to communicate it to you, they start using their arms and hands. So when you ask people, again, when I talk to people about what's critical, important, and urgent, you know, they're often talking about either their fears or a great opportunity. But I can, you know, I'm sensitive to this, but as soon as they start talking with their hands, I know they've opened up. And then all I do is I just push for more details. Tell me more about that. Tell me more. Tell me why that's important. Tell me why that's urgent. Tell me why that, not something else. And so can you see in your mind's eye that as we're having, as I'm talking with them, not at them, that it's attracting them into the persuasion cycle.
Yes, that's really great. Thank you for explaining that. We're up to our first break, and when we come back, I want to explore the emotional side of getting through to people, such as mirroring another person's feelings. Is that a topic we can go into?
Absolutely.
Next? Okay.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Full Power Living, and we will be right back.
Listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
How difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want? To take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes? Or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com.
On Full Power Living, talking with psychiatrist, consultant, executive coach, and former FBI hostage negotiation trainer, Mark Goulston. You can visit him on the web at markgoulston.com, and you spell Goulston, G-O-U-L-S-T-O-N. So at the end of our last, at the end of your book of Just Listen, you invite readers to reach out to you and let them know how what you've offered in Just Listen has worked for them, making a point that if you want to reach people, you've got to be reachable. So tell us a little bit more about what people can find on your website and where they can get your book.
Well, you can. Just Listen was a actually an Amazon number one bestseller in five business categories in the first couple of weeks it came out. And so I think... It should be available at all major bookstores, but what I would advise is if you can, unless you got to get it today because this has been such a compelling interview, what I would say is order it online, and there's a pretty significant discount at either Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Borders, or 800 CEO Read. And so I would get the book through them. What's available on my website, markgoulston.com, is what you'll see is my blog, and you can do an RSS feed because I'm very interested in the human condition. And so on any given day, I never know what I'm going to write about, and I do blog for Psychology Today, for Fast Company, for the Huffington Post. And like today's blog, if you go to markgoulston.com, I went up this morning, was, has Tiger Woods killed the golden goose of athlete endorsements?
And what For everybody. For everybody.
Yeah. And what I talked about, and I don't have an answer, and I'm inviting input, is I met with some friends last night, and what we were saying is, you know, people are discovering that superstar athletes and superstar celebrities are really good at what they do, but they're not heroes. And what we found sad is that sports in general really doesn't have heroes who don't turn out to have feet of clay, and Tiger Woods seemed to be this glaring exception. You could tell your kids, grow up to be Tiger Woods. And now, given this whole this whole circus, it's almost like the higher they are, the bigger they fall. And it was fascinating. I was with these friends last night, and we spent a half an hour trying to figure out, is there a sports figure that, you know, at the end of the day deserves to be seen as a hero? And we came up with one, and that was John Wooden, the coach of UCLA's basketball team. He won 10 NCAA tournaments, and it's interesting, people who played for him at UCLA, who went on to be stars in the NBA, most of those people, when you ask them what was the best years of your career, they will say respectfully and lovingly, when we played for Coach Wooden at UCLA. And so, anyway, I'm just throwing that out there because I was fascinated in the conversation I had with these people last night, and it's on my site. So you'll find things like that. Something else that I think is nifty, there's something called free resources. If you click on, you'll get some content that you won't get anywhere else. And so I'll give you a lost leader. One of the little things under free resources is how to get people to respect and appreciate and treat you better. Two questions, and I'll share what they are. And let me ask you, Eileen, if someone said this to you, if it would increase your respect and appreciation for them. If someone were to say, Eileen, do I have your permission to step in and protect you and your future from any harm to your person, your family, or your financial future? If you say that to most people that I've said it to will say yes. 70% laugh and say, chuckle. They say, please do, because I can really mess things up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second question is, in the event, Eileen, that the person I need to most protect you from hurting your future is you, how shall I go about doing that?
Wow.
And then what you would tell me is, well, you know, don't embarrass me in front of other people, you know, maybe do it discreetly, or, you know, don't do it by an impersonal thing like an email, or whatever you tell me. But can you see how those two questions would cause people to respect you and appreciate you?
Yes. Well, you're also offering respect and appreciation for the person, and one of the principles that I follow is that it's important to ask for someone to ask for help. So you're actually setting things up for that person to receive your help. Otherwise, they'll be closed down. People don't like to be helped if they haven't asked for it.
Absolutely. So anyway, that's one of the things. If people come to my site and they click on free resources.
That's wonderful, and it's wonderful to have these things written down. That's one of the things I really appreciated in reading the Just Listen book. Now, in that book, you talk about mirror neurons that were discovered with monkeys, how monkeys could have their bodies. I can't remember how it was, but they were watching the other monkeys, and these mirror receptors were activated. And along with that, in Just Listen, you talk about mirror neuron receptor deficit, which you've alluded to already, but I'd like you to go into this issue a little bit more.
Okay. So, again, I always give a lesson within a lesson. So, again, even though I talked about experience near language, mirror neuron receptor deficit is about as experience distant as you can get. So often when I'm talking about that to audiences, and I say that, I can see the audience as having flashbacks of high school biology and not liking it. And so the challenge is, if in the next 3 or 4 minutes I can explain it to you, will it have been worth the effort to understand it? And then I ask people, and so here it goes. Mirror neurons were discovered in the late 1980s in macaque monkeys, and they were first called monkey-see, monkey-do neurons. And they're an area of the prefrontal cortex that are very special, and they fire when a monkey or a human being sees another human being doing something. So when someone else yawns and you yawn, your mirror neurons are firing. They also fire when you imagine something in your mind's eye happening. So athletes who actually imagine a tennis ball or a golf ball going a certain way, this part of the brain actually feels it's happening. And then they fire when you actually do it. So what's fascinating about these mirror neurons is they are thought to be the site of imitation, learning, and empathy, and when they're defective, to be the site associated with autism, because autistic children and people are not able to mirror social cues. Now, the concept that I came up with, mirror neuron receptor deficit, and since I'm not a researcher, I'm a practitioner, I'm going to take a lot of heat for this. My observation, doing my work for 30 years, is that most of us conform to the outside world to survive, to get by. But all the time that we are conforming to the emotional needs of the outside world, it develops a hunger in us to be cared about in return. And so that's the receptor deficit, meaning we mirror others, but our receptors are hungry for someone to care in return. And what's fascinating is that all the tearjerker scenes in movies, when they occur, usually what's happened is two people have gone from really misunderstanding each other to totally understanding each other. And those are the scenes that cause the audience to cry and often the characters to cry. And the crying is the experience of relief when the mirror neuron receptor deficit is eliminated. So one of the most famous scenes in the past, I don't know how many years, was in a movie called As Good As It Gets with Jack Nicholson and Helen Hunt. And I think you know what I'm about to say. There is a scene in which tough, rough Jack Nicholson talks about taking medication for his OCD. And waitress Helen Hunt looks at him and says, well, why are you telling me this? And then Jack Nicholson, in his wonderful style, says, because you make me want to be a better man. Mm-hmm. Remember that scene?
Yeah.
And so my view is if you can correct the mirror neuron receptor deficit in other people, and they're always feeling it, that experience of relief they become grateful for. And just like that CEO, see, he had a mirror neuron receptor deficit when I met with him, meaning, you know, there he was trying to take care of the whole world and barely holding on. And what happened is by my showing caring to him, and wanting to take care of him, when in his position he was someone who took care of the world, that caused him to tear up. And so so let me ask you, was it worth the explanation?
Yeah, I'm wondering, now that's a good example. If I'm a listener to this show, perhaps I would want to know, well, okay, so what technique, how do I heal? You did it through empathy, you did it through caring for this man, but how do you know when it's there, and what do you, is there a specific technique, that one of the nine that you present, that goes with that especially?
Well, sure. One of the things is to realize that we're always listening through filters, and that the filters are often built up from our past life, and they're often inaccurate to the current situation. So if you can first of all realize that we're never really listening with an open mind, and just be aware of that, and in your mind sort of let that go, and then I think, as I said, I think if you focus on serving the other person and have a deep-seated belief that, you know, if you serve others and you're helpful to them, that it will come back, then the techniques are basically, you know, asking questions that help the other person to speak about what's really on their mind and what's really important to them. And I talk about some of those things in those nine core rules.
Yeah.
And we talked about feeling felt. one of the other favorite chapters that people have is be more interested than interesting.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Good.
It's interesting. It may or may not surprise you, but I am painfully shy. I mean, I'm what you call a role-specific extrovert, meaning here I am on a radio show and I want to help people, or when I'm out there trying to help the world, I can be rather forceful, but, you know, not unlike a lot of people, especially a lot of men, I can be exquisitely shy. And years ago, I remember I was being a pain in the neck whenever my wife would want us to go to a party, because I would literally go to the chip dip, you know, and all these parties always have onion, French onion dip. I don't know why, but I'd watch it change colors. I just stare it. I happen to like it, by the way. And I remember one day I said to myself, you know, I'm going to go and I'm going to meet three people and they're going to be glad they met me. And I don't know how I'm going to do it. And by the end of the evening, I had met five people and three of them shook my hand with both hands, looked me in the eye and said, you know, it was really great speaking to you. And so afterwards, I thought to myself, what the heck did I do? And one of the things that I came up with, and I call this FTD delivery, you know, similar to the flower thing. And what FTD stands for are feelings, thoughts, and the D is actions, doing. And what I realized with all those people is I asked them questions that elicited from them something they felt, had feelings about. Like, for instance, if I was at a party, I'd say, gee, if you were Tiger Woods, what would you be feeling right now? And then I would ask people, especially men, I'd say, what do you think about such and such situation? And then I'd ask them an action thing. You know, if you were in Tiger Woods' situation, or if you were President Obama, what would you do with everyone pulling at you? And what I discovered is when you draw out of people what they feel, what they think, and what they would do, feelings, thoughts, and actions, they feel known by you. Mm-hmm. And so that's a way of showing true interest. And it was interesting because, and I think they felt known because in a lot of our relationships, we don't share all three of those things. I mean, one of the things that frustrate a lot of women is that men will not tell you what they're feeling. And so you feel frustrated, you feel alone, you feel disconnected. And often what happens with men, the frustration with women is that, you know, women may not tell you what, they'll tell you what they're thinking, but it's kind of opinionated. And so often, you know, men will hear too much feelings. And so if in your conversations, you can just kind of, like a sailboat, you know, tacking from starboard to port and back and forth in your conversations, if you can just draw out, they're saying the word, well, I would feel such and such, or this is what I think, or that's what I would do. In my mind, when those three lights go off, I know that the other person will feel understood by me, probably even feel felt by me, and they'll be appreciative of that.
That's
that make
really
sense?
Great.
Yes. Well, thank
yes.
you.
As a person, a woman, I have found that often I will say to my partner, if I were in your position, I'd be feeling this right now. And since you're not telling me, I'm going to have to go on the assumption that this is what's happening because it's the best I've got. And if you've got another feeling, tell me quickly. So anyway, it's time for our break. We are talking with Mark Goulson about the secrets for getting through to absolutely anyone. And in our next segment, I hope we'll be looking a little bit at the power thank you and the power apology. You're listening to Full Power Living. Stay tuned for more.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Everybody feels anger. But if you don't learn to deal with it, anger can mess up your life. It can cause you relationship problems, difficulties on the job, or create health problems. If you want a way to understand and work with anger that's simple yet so powerful, it helps you to put an end to the specific angers that are messing up your life, then you'll want to get a copy of a mini course I've created for you entitled Reduce Anger Now. With it, I want you to be able to figure out what's stimulating the anger you feel and have an easy way to change that anger so you can dramatically reduce the anger in your life. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, longtime psychotherapist, coach, and anger expert. I've helped thousands of people to master anger, and I want you to begin to become an anger master in your life. Order Reduce Anger Now at the store, www.emotionalpro.com. That's www.emotionalpro.com.
So welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a couple of announcements. In January, we're emphasizing health. We've booked Ivan Rados, for example, an author who's published by Namaste, the folks who bring you the Eckhart Tolle books, and he's talking about his book, Health, It's All About Consciousness. We're also planning a visit with the fabulous Michael Brown as we revisit his updated presence process. Be sure to be with us for our wonderful shows as we continue our own quest to awaken the world to the power and importance of human emotions. We've got nearly 200 shows right here on emotionalpro.com with fantastic guests like Mark Goulston has been for us today, with incredible things for you to discover from each one. So listen to them on the archives, emotionalpro.com, or download them to your MP3 player or computer from iTunes. All you have to do is type in my name, Ilene Dillon, Dillon, and subscribe to Full Power Living. So while you're here on Emotional Pro, check out my professional speaking and psychotherapy pages. Pick up an ebook from the store, such as 99 Tips for Mastering Fear or the ABCs of Love. And remember that I'm hosting two additional internet radio shows on the Women's Information Network. That's at the Win Online, thewinonline.com, with my co-host, life coach Dakey Fox. They're called Taking My Turn and Building Conscious Families. And if you'd like to be included in our Girls Night Out in the San Francisco Bay Area on February 22nd, send me an email so that I can notify you of what's coming up. Our guest today is psychiatrist, consultant, columnist, former FBI hostage negotiation trainer Mark Goulston, who you can find at markgoulston, GOULSTON.com on the web. So, Mark, I want to talk about exhaling and dissonance. And you talk some about exhaling, but what about dissonance?
Well, dissonance is, we know the word resonance, you know, when something resonates with you. And so dissonance is kind of the opposite. And what that means is when you see and hear something and it doesn't match what you feel, your gut causes you to pull back. And so what you, something we talked about before the break is when you create dissonance, you're widening the mirror neuron receptor deficit. And so you want to correct dissonance. Now, so I'll give you for instance, there was a lawyer I know who was just terrific at what she did, but she was she wasn't as successful. She was successful in winning cases, but she wasn't as successful in gaining new clients because, frankly, people wondered if she had the killer instinct. Because when you hire a lawyer and you've messed up, what you're saying, you may not say it in the conversation, is if this thing really gets ugly, can you stand up to the other side and win for me? And so because she had such good manners, I think it was unclear to people whether she could be a gladiator. And she told me, she said, look, you know, I win my cases, but I don't have a lot of bravado. I'm not like one of these brazen, people that needs to push their weight around. So the way we had her correct dissonance is I helped her to be aware when people were kind of puzzled and people were nodding, you know, saying, well, you know, it makes sense, and let me think about it. And so what she came up with, what we came up with her is that at that moment, instead of trying to, come up with their objections, because no one's going to say, I don't know if you're enough of a killer for me. And so what she came up with is she said, oh, by the way, if you work with me, something you need to know is that I'm a killer, but I'm not a murderer. Mm, and they said,
yeah,
what?
That's good.
Yeah. And she said, well, sometimes I need to kill for my clients, and my way of doing it is through being complete, crossing all the T's, dotting all the I's. And what happens is judges who aren't that impressed with the bravado of the other side are really impressed with the preparation I have, and so I can kill for you that way, but I'm not someone who enjoys, hurting other people just for the sake of, abusing them. I mean, that's not my style. But you need to know that if I'm called upon to kill for you, I will. And so what happened is that resolved the dissonance that people were having that she couldn't do that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's what dissonance is. And in that chapter, people seem to like it because there's a list of ways in which you may be triggering dissonance without being aware of it. For instance, here are some of the things that can trigger dissonance. Believing that you're being shrewd and the other person thinks you're sly. Believing you're confident and the other person thinks you're arrogant. Believing that you're humorous and the other person thinks you're inappropriate. And there's a whole list of things like that. But you can see that if you're not aware of how you're coming off, that can trigger the other person saying, if this person is so clueless about how they're coming off, if they're so out of touch with that, maybe they're out of touch with a lot of things, that could really hurt my case. So that's one of the reasons you want to resolve dissonance when you can.
That's really good. Yes, I used to, I do have a sense of humor that people have a hard time telling whether I'm talking about real things or I'm being humorous. And once I became aware of that, then I inform people that I can feel when they're going, what is she talking about? And I go, that was a joke. You need to know that sometimes I tell jokes that people are not sure if they are jokes, and this is one of them. And that has helped a lot to reduce that. So I hadn't understood in those terms about that before. Well, one of the things that's curious is that you have this book that you've written, Just Listen, and it's all about connecting with people. And then you throw in a chapter on toxic people. Why do you do that? And what do you want people to know about toxic people?
Well, there are people who are psychopaths. There are people who are only about getting whatever they want, forgetting the consequences to other people. And one of the mistakes that often beginning therapists get into is making excuses for some of the people that really, there are evil people. And so what I'm saying is, you want to recognize those people and cut your losses. One of the main reasons people don't cut their losses from these toxic people is, now part of it is you're afraid of how they'll react. You're afraid that they'll get angry, or if it's a whiny, toxic person, that they'll just be so hurt, or maybe they get self-destructive. But in addition to that, I think the deeper motivation is having to accept that all the time and effort that you put into this relationship, you're going to have nothing to show for. And so that's why we often say, oh, if I could just fix it, if I could just redeem this relationship, then everything I've put into this, the 15 years of this marriage to the wrong person, I'll get something back for it. So I don't think people think of that consciously, but when that comes out, I think a lot of people say, I think you're absolutely right. It's so painful to know that after all this time, if I walk away, the only thing I'm going to have is my health. And so what I tell people is, don't minimize mental health, walking away with that, because there are some people who never walk away with that, and they lose it, and they're lost forever.
Yes. Well, I really support what you're saying there. I have certainly done some of that in my life, but walking away and being willing to walk away and recognize this person is really not going to do me any good, and I don't need to be here. There are another 6.5 billion people in the world I choose from, I think is really important. So you present a lot of techniques in Just Listen. Like, you know, actually, I'm looking at our time. I think I would like to offer something else here. I want to tell you something, Mark. Your approach to communication, as you applied it to the work situation and to a person's personal life, has actually been inspiring to me. I really have enjoyed learning about you and your work, and I'm sure it has taken a lot of work for you to create Just Listen and get it to the market. And so I want to let you know how grateful I am to you for spending the time and the effort to put Just Listen into our hands. What you offer in that book will make my own work as a psychotherapist and a wife and communicator easier. And I'm understanding some things in a different way that's been helpful to me, and it inspires me to use them. So thank you.
I'm a teacher, so you almost gave me, I think you gave me most of the components of a power thank you.
Good.
And a power
I wanted to
you,
check with you. How did I do?
you did well. And a power thank you has three parts. And the three parts are to point out to someone what something specifically they did, or it could be a negative thing they refrained from doing. You know, you really could have humiliated and beaten me up, and you didn't. You didn't rub my face in it. So the first thing is you thank them for what they did. The second part is acknowledging the effort it took for them, and that they put themselves out for you. And then the third part of a power thank you is what it personally means to you. So as I think about it, I don't think I was thankful enough to you, because I think you hit all three.
Thank you. I worked hard at it. No, I didn't really. It's an easy formula, and I sincerely mean it. And at the same time, I thought it would be a good way to demonstrate what it is, because it does take a lot of work to bring a book and book to market, and you do have fabulous ideas, and you explain them very well and put them out in such a way that a person can thumb through and go, oh, yes, that's what I need to do here. And that's very welcome as far as I'm concerned. But mostly I wanted to illustrate some of the wonderful ideas that you have in the book. I hope people will consider getting their own copy of Just Listen as soon as they hear about it right here on this show. We need to draw the show to a close, so let me ask you if there's any one thing that you want to send people off with as a keeper that's really important to you.
What's most important in life is not what you tell others, but what you enable them to tell you that's troubling them so they can be relieved of it, that they're hopeful of so that you can help them achieve it. And I'll tell you, I think it can relieve some of the shame that I see in people, because I occasionally see people in therapy who are successful and they're known to be generous, and I say, what troubles you? And they, you know, when they open up to me, they say, I don't think I care about people. I mean, no one would know that because I write checks and I donate and I say all the right things. But in my heart of hearts, I don't really think I care about people. And I said, well, how do you say that? And many of them will say, because I don't listen. I just I just, you know, I interrupt people, and so I don't feel like I'm a good person, and sometimes I don't feel like I deserve to be happy, so I can't enjoy the fruits of my labor, and so I think what those people are learning, it's not rocket science, is I think if you can learn to listen in the ways you and I have spoken about, and I hope comes out in the book, I think you can actually feel like you're a caring person, and I think when you feel that, you begin to feel like you actually deserve happiness when it comes your way.
Wow, that's very beautifully stated. Thank you. Thank you again very much for your time and for your book, Just Listen, and for being with us here on Full Power Living today. It's been a great pleasure and an honor to have you on the show.
Well, you listen so well. No, I mean that. And I couldn't have done it without you, Eileen. You were great. Thank you.
Please be sure to join us every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time when we continue our tradition on Full Power Living of bringing you the most cutting-edge thinkers and helpers on the planet. Join us next week when we begin our look at health with Ivan Rados as he talks about health. It's a matter of consciousness. We look forward to having you with us then and for all of our shows. Thanks to our supportive and talented producer at Fresh Talk Media, Paul Johnston. Until next time, I'm your host, Eileen Dillon, thanking you for listening and reminding you, pay attention to what you want to become and not to what you want to overcome.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.